Welcome, everyone. If you have interest in hearing from a guy that started his entrepreneurial journey as an 8-year-old kid selling candy for a profit to closing on 10 multifamily syndication deals, you are going to want to hear what Dustin Miles has to say. Dustin invests both time and money to learn and grow. He believes in leveraging the experience of others that have gone before him, and he loves a challenge. Before we jump into the intro, it was only 3 years ago when I started to invest in multifamily syndications. I didn't know how it worked, and I didn't know how to get involved. Now I know, and I want to share some of my tips on how to get started with you. If you go to my website at darrenbatchelder.com, I have a free PDF for you. It's my 5-step process for passively investing in real estate. Check it out, and I hope it helps. Now, on to the intro.
Welcome to Darren Batchelder's Real Estate Investing Show. Each week, you will learn how to grow your wealth through real estate investing. Be introduced to the players that are getting it done and learn how you can get involved. And now, here's your host, Darren Batchelder.
A little background on Dustin Miles before we start the show. Dustin lives in Fort Worth, Texas. He went to school for engineering and started to invest first in single family and then scaled up into multifamily. He's closed on 10 syndications with over 1,500 units. He's always learning, always growing, and he has a passion for giving back to charity and to others coming up behind him. Now, on to the show. Hello, everyone. I have a special guest here today. I've got Dustin Miles here with us today. Dustin, thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah, thank you. Super excited to be here.
Absolutely. So here's how I know Dustin. So Dustin and I are both part of the same multifamily mentorship group. And when I got involved in real estate investing about 3 years ago, I joined the group and I wasn't on social media at all. I wasn't on Facebook. I wasn't on anything. And the folks within the multifamily mentorship group told me I needed to get on Facebook and I needed to join this private Facebook group. And so I did. And when I did that, I started to see a bunch of posts from people in the group. And I was starting to look for, well, who in the group are actually doing deals? Who are the syndicators versus the individuals that are investing in these deals? And it was very evident that Dustin was involved in a lot of deals. And so I reached out to him and we had a great conversation early on. And I'm just very thankful that, you know, this is an industry where people give back, share with each other and help the next guy coming up. So I think that you guys are all going to really like this because Dustin has a ton of experience. So Dustin, again, appreciate you coming on.
Yeah. Appreciate you having me on. Super excited to be here. I guess just to give a little background on me, I'm from Fort Worth, Texas. Live here now. Went to UT Austin for engineering school, and kind of rewind a little bit more. I've always been pretty entrepreneurial. As a little kid, I had a candy business. My bus driver called me the candy man, and
how did that work?
Basically I paid my parents and, I was 8, you know,
and 8 years old,
old. Yeah. I paid my parents. They'd go to Sam's, they would buy blow pops and they'd buy, Jolly Ranchers and, Laffy Taffy. And then I would just mark up the difference and, profited probably $50 a week. So it was a nice deal.
An 8-year old, you think so? Yeah, that's fantastic.
Yeah. my school told me that I had to stop selling candy or they were going to kick me out. So I went ahead and stopped selling candy. And I think they were just mad. I was probably, getting in on their territory. So, but bought and sold baseball cards, mowed lawns, through a terrible carnival. And then, growing up, you know, going into college, you know, went to, like I said, UT Austin, and, I had an internet business. I'm 42. And so that was pretty early. And, as far as the internet's concerned, not everybody had a website. And so I initially started, built a website, I had a friend of mine that helped me with that. And then I, sold, Pokemon cards. I didn't know anything about Pokemon cards, but my college apartment was half filled with them. And I sold Pokemon cards on eBay and Yahoo auctions. And so sold them all around the world. I think 14 or 15 different countries.
That was after college?
No, that was during college. Yeah.
During college.
Yeah. So when I was going to class, I had two backpacks. I had my engineering backpack, and then my other backpack was full of packages that I would send around the world, full of Pokemon cards.
That's interesting. So were your parents entrepreneurial? Like, where do you think you got that bent from?
Yeah, my dad is pretty, entrepreneurial. He had comic book stores, and a Halloween store. And, so he grew up, basically buying and selling comic books. He had, all the top Batman #1, Superman #1, they're worth a bajillion dollars right now. He doesn't have those now, but he had all, he was, in the business. And so he, if he could sell ice to an Eskimo, I don't think I'm that good of a salesperson, but, I think I present myself well and I'm determined and very persistent. So.
Absolutely. So, now you get out of school. Then why did you go to school for engineering when you're have this entrepreneurial bent? I think of engineers. I mean, I know a lot of engineers in the multifamily space, and engineers are extremely bright and a very difficult major. I know a lot of, I was a business major, and I knew a lot of people that started in engineering and they ended up in the business right. school. But it doesn't seem like it fits with your background of being an entrepreneur.
Yeah. So I had the option of going into business or engineering. And honestly, I like a challenge. And so that's why I went engineering. And it was harder for me. There, some of my friends, I think, got through engineering school. It was, some of them didn't have to work nearly as hard, but I had to. It was a challenge for me. I had to work pretty hard. It was mechanical engineering, top 10 school in the country. And it was hard. It was, hard that and, having normally at least a job or two during school. And then, and then I had a business, on top of that. So it was busy.
Yeah, that's a lot. That's a lot. So now you graduate with an engineering degree. And what kind of business did you go into?
I got my first job was a fuel cell research job. So it's kind of funny. I think your son just went to A&M or just got back to A&M.
He's a sophomore. Yeah.
Yeah. And, so I went from Austin to College Station.
You did
my first job. Yeah. Which is, I was a poor college student and most of my shirts were UT this and UT that. So everywhere
I went, those around there.
Yeah, everywhere I went, I was hissed at. So that was interesting.
see, so you still wore them. I was thinking you just kept them in the closet.
No. I wore them. That's all I had. And I was poor and UT frankly was winning a lot then. So it worked well. But a few years later it wouldn't have worked as well. But Right.
That's back when the rivalry, they still played against each other.
Yeah, I was at the game where Ricky Williams broke the record against A&M in 98. So, yeah.
Oh, awesome.
98 or
awesome.
99, yeah.
So, say the title of the job again. Like, when you said it, I'm like, all right, I'm going to have him define what the heck that is. Because it sounds really important and it sounds like you were making a lot of money right out of school, but I have no idea what that is.
Yeah, I was not making a whole lot of money, but
what was it called? Fuel cell something?
Yeah, fuel cell research engineer. Okay. I that was that's basically why I did. But yeah, it was fuel cells kind of never really, it was an alternative to batteries. And so basically you insert, it can be other fuels, it could be methanol, but you insert hydrogen and you get the byproducts are like electricity and gas, or electricity and water, I'm sorry. So there was a promise for them using them in cars, and that, you know, felt like it's kind of faded. The projects I was working on were, we were building the fuel cell part that was going to go into UAVs. So
very, technical and complex, in terms of types of projects engineers get involved in. So now do you stay in the engineering field? And then I remember when, we got together for coffee one time and, you know, you told me that you started, you know, your real estate journey in single family. Maybe you could kind of talk through how you ended up getting into that and how that progressed into multifamily.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I got into single family, after college, started doing single family rentals and flips. And, you know, I did about half a dozen of those. And, you know, it was kind of at that point where I always had the vision of going bigger. It wasn't, you know, I was trying to figure out whether that was buying a bunch of single family homes or if that was, you know, kind of jumping into multifamily, because this was in the late 90s. And frankly, I didn't know a whole lot of people that were in multifamily. There weren't a ton of them. And I had found, you know, one group where I remember I met this guy. He was at a single family meetup and super, super nice guy. And we're still friends today. And I remember I was amazed because I'd never met anyone that owned more than a duplex or a fourplex. And he owned, I think it was 24 units in Lawton, Oklahoma, and he lived in Dallas. And I was amazed. I was like, oh my gosh, how's this guy doing it? And so I didn't get for some reason, I didn't have his contact information, or I didn't get it. And so I called the person that ran the meetup. I was like, hey, I really want to get in touch with this person. I want to go have lunch with him. I'm going to try and learn everything I can. And then, you know, hopefully do something kind of similar. And sure. So ended up hunting him down and hopefully he didn't think I was stalking him too much, but, I ended up meeting him. And then it was interesting after that, I started meeting, it was kind of like whenever you go buy a car, you suddenly see, it feels like everybody else has that car. And so I met him, he had 24 units. I met a guy with 50 and then 100 and then, you know, 1,000. And then I had lunch with a guy that had 10,000 plus. And I was just like, whoa, okay. And I was like, okay, these are normal people. You know, I think I can do this. And then a friend of mine was putting his first deal together in 2012. And I was like, hey, I'd like to throw in some money. And I was like, hey, I think it helps build my resume if I'm a key principal, a KP on the deal. And he's like, okay, well, you can meet a KP, but you need to throw in a little more money. I was like, okay, let's do it. And so I'm actually still, we still own that deal today. It's in your neck of the woods. It's over in Wiley. So deal. Yeah, it was crazy. So 2012, I forgot the exact cap rate, but bought it is between a 9 and a 10 cap. This is a B deal. Yeah. And people thought we were crazy because we were spending $46,000 per door at the time for this B deal. And this was, you know, we were paying, you know, top of market, and everybody's like, oh my gosh, what are you doing basically? So dove into that, did another passive deal, but kind of, you know, around that time I was liquidating, the single family I had, and I had some, rehab projects that I was winding down. And, so, you know, basically prepping myself for, for going into multifamily, and then, you know, hired a mentor, you know, in 2013. And then, got going from there, started making offers, and, landed my, first deal, syndicated deal I put together in 2014.
Awesome. Awesome. So you said one thing, you said, I think I can do this, like, you know, and I think that that's such a critical statement for, you know, people. I get people that reach out to me all the time on Instagram, and I'm sure you get a lot of new people looking to break into the space. I think that that's so critical. I think I can do this. Like you surrounded yourself with other people that had already done it. And then, you know, not to be judgmental, but like you look at them and you say, look, if they can do it, why can't I do it? Right?
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
But if you don't go searching for those conversations and meet those people and realize, you also said they're normal people. Yep. Like, you know, you, there's a lot of people in this world that will say, I'd love to invest in those large apartment communities or large deals, but they don't take action to meet people. That they don't know anybody that does that, and they don't take action to meet those people. So that's, you know, key. Once you meet those people, it becomes less intimidating.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting, you know, when I, back in the day when I first started, there wasn't Facebook. And I mean, there's a plethora of resources for getting in touch with people. And I, you know, honestly, back then it was tough to find those people. You know, I'm a big believer in the Jim Rohn quote, you know, you're the average of the five people you hang around. And, you know, so it's like anything in life. If, you know, like I just hired a track coach, pretty recently. And, you know, this guy's run a sub 4 minute mile before. And, you know, he, it's kind of funny. He trains, it's a bunch of high school kids trying to get scholarships. And then there's the 40-year-old me out there.
Let's clarify the list for the listeners, because I see your social media and you're always out on the track running. So he hired the track coach, not to help him with multifamily, but for your track skills, correct?
That's right. Well, I don't, track skills is, you know, lofty. I don't know if that, big quotes around that, but,
right. Relative.
Yeah. It's, you know, so, I mean, he's been there, done that, and he's coached people. I'm not trying to run a sub 4 minute mile. I'm trying to run a sub 5 minute mile, and, you know, but he's already been there. He's done that. He's coached people on how to do that. It's just like in multifamily when, you know, wanted to learn how to do it, got around those people. And then, you know, you either partner up with people or you hire a coach, and I hired a coach. And then I also partnered up with people. I did both. And so, you know, on the first deal I syndicated, I partnered up with the guy that I was KP on his first deal. You know, and then, another deal, I partnered up with him, and then I also partnered up with my mentor on a deal, apartment coach. So, I mean, you know, it's not rocket science. It's, you know, find, you know, anything you want to do in life, you just find people who, you know, are available as coach or you can partner with, and, you know, go take action, go put yourself out there.
I completely agree with that. But, you know, I think that you have to add to that mindset, right? So you grew up with an entrepreneurial mindset, and you took chances, you took risks, you know, starting little business ventures and doing different things. And so then you did single family, always wanted to go bigger and got into multifamily. There, I'm sure you run across these types of people as well. I talk to people that some people think, like, in their mind, that they're not worthy, that they're not, you know, capable of doing it, you know, why would somebody want to partner with them when they have no experience? And, you know, it's trying to, you know, let them know that, look, everybody started somewhere, yeah, right? Everybody started with no investment properties, you know? A lot of people start in the single family and then they grow into multifamily. Some people go directly into multifamily, but everybody started with no experience, but they were able to have the mindset that they could do it. So I think you have to make a personal decision that I'm going to do it and I can do it, and then seek out those people that can teach you how to get there.
Absolutely. Yeah. 100%. Yeah. I mean, there's, you know, you can make excuses or you can go out there and get it done. I mean, you know, I was listening to an audio book. I was running earlier this week, and the guy was talking about, he's talking about Arnold Schwarzenegger's journey. And so it's this guy in Austria. I don't think he spoke English, or if he did, it was very butchered, but this is right after World War II. And, you know, he wanted to be a movie star. And, you know, so he moved to America, he worked his butt off, and oh my gosh, it's this, you know, random guy from Austria that ended up becoming the governor of the largest state and population in the country. So
that's a crazy story. I mean, he doesn't fit the model actor, you know, type, but he had the determination to make it happen.
He was the Terminator, so, you know.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Hey, you talked about hiring a mentor. You talked about, you know, hiring a track coach. And I know that when we met, you talked very highly about being involved in mastermind groups. And actually, before this recording, you were just getting off a mastermind.
Yes.
So talk about to listeners about what, you know, look, you've already, actually, I didn't ask you, how many units and how many deals are you in?
I don't know passively. I'm in probably half a dozen passively, but I've done, I've been either, you know, co-captain or co-captain on 10 deals or so, sponsored or co-sponsored 10 deals. I think it's about 1500 units. And so, it's eight of them in Texas, two in Oklahoma. So
awesome. I mean, like, look, you've got the experience now. Like, you're a guy that's done 10 deals, sent 10 syndication deals, 1500 units. Why invest in mastermind groups?
Yeah, it's interesting. So I invested, you know, more in myself last year than I have, you know, previously before. So I'm in Strategic Coach, which is a kind of mastermind I'm in. Another mastermind I'm in is called ISI. It's called Iron Sharpens Iron. It's led by Aaron Walker. And I've been in there for about 2.5 years. Great, great group of guys. The reason why I joined that group was I was interested in having an online presence, and I knew that he's been on John Lee Dumas's podcast as much as anyone else. I think 5 times, and I knew him and some other people within his group. You know, we're good at building an online presence. And so I wanted to go learn from them. And what I didn't realize is, you know, they're very good about not only helping to shape, your business life and helping to, you know, prompt that up, but, you know, their focus is on the entire, your entire life, not just business. So that was, a very, very pleasant surprise. But, I'm always, there's a mastermind that it's not paid or anything that I'm starting, just a few guys, but they're very high level guys, and we're all kind of building an audience or trying to at least. And, it's just a bunch of, great, great guys. And, you get around, really good people, and it's not a, 1 + 1 does not equal 2 in those instances. 1 + 1 could be 3 or it could be 10. So, Really, really interested in focused on, deeper relationships and, just with good people, good things happen. So,
yeah, that's awesome. So a few things there. One, Napoleon Hill's book, right? Think and Grow Rich. I mean, that book is like, if you have not read that book, you have to read that book. But he talks a lot about the mastermind. And it is so true that you get around, a group of people and 1 + 1, it equals more than 2. It equals 3 or greater. So I think it's important for listeners to understand that even as you become successful, you're still trying to better yourself, personally and professionally, and invest back in yourself. And it's not just for personal gain. I know you. We talked at length at coffee, and we'll talk about it some more here. You have a lot of goals that are to help others and charitable related. But investing in yourself helps so that you can impact more people. And so I think that's huge. The other thing was just the name of that mastermind. Iron sharpens iron leads me to believe that there's some type of Christian kind of focus to it. I mean, that it may not be, but that, is talked a lot about in a kind of a Christian context.
There is part of that. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then when we sign off, I'm going to have to ask you about this last mastermind that's just getting going. Cause I may try to take advantage of that. So, thanks for bringing all that up. That's huge is we're all trying to learn from each other and help the next guy. And we all learn from each other from that. I'm part of a Monday morning men's Bible study. We used to meet at somebody's house every morning, Monday morning at 6 a.m. But because of COVID, we started doing Zoom calls and we've been doing it for, 2 or 3 years now. And I'm so thankful, and all the guys in the group that have been there for a while, that, so many, prayer praises that at the end, just saying we're thankful to have each other, because look, life goes in ebbs and flows. And sometimes, there's a guy in the group that's going through a challenge, and everybody else comes along and helps coach them along the way. And then all of a sudden, 6 months later, you find yourself in a challenge and they help you. And so that same type of thing can happen in a business mastermind group as well. So you learn from each other. So that's awesome. So talk about one of the things I've seen you doing. So it sounds like it's coming out of this mastermind, is I've seen you start to have more of a website presence and start putting out webinars and educational content. And so talk about what you're doing there.
Yeah. It's called Momentum Multifamily. And my partner on that is Hayden Harrington. And, I think, super, super just great guy. We're very similar, but we have complementary, skill sets. He's great he's great with a lot of things, but great with marketing and all that. But, as far as the, webinars and all that, yeah, we've been, we had in-person events is I think and we were originally, I think last April or May of 2019 is kind of when we kicked off that meetup, and we started out at 25, 30 people or so, and outgrew the space we were in and had to end up moving to the West End. And so ended up averaging around 100 people or so. And when COVID hit, we ended up, obviously going to the webinar we didn't know. We thought everybody, I don't know what everybody thought, but I thought the whole COVID thing was going to last for like a month or 6 weeks. So I was like, we were doing like 2 or 3 webinars a week. Cause I was like, let's pump out a lot of content. Let's do this, you know, while everything's kind of slow. And, anyways, obviously this, you know, this may end up going on for a while, or yeah, I think we may just end up adapting and all that. But, yeah, we've kind of settled on doing webinars every other week. We have, you know, articles we're putting out there as well. We have, you know, multifamily 101, you know, ebook. And we have lots of different resources for people out there. We have different series. We have the heavy hitter series is kind of people that have been around the block. Some have, you know, 1,000+ units, and then we have a panel series where we've had, women's panel. We've had doctors panel, military panel. And then we have what we call multifamily 101 series, where it's more of a learning process. We had Mauricio Raul talk about PPMs and all that. We had Christy come on talking about taxes and how taxes can benefit folks. So, it's been a great learning experience. I did want to mention that, as far as the kind of giving back. So within Momentum, we did a charity event last year. And man, that was a lot of work. I've never put anything like that together. And we ended up, I don't remember the exact number. We ended up raising, I think, after all the bills were paid, we ended up, you know, raising over $7,000 for cancer care services.
Nice.
And I'm on their board, and great charity. But it was a lot of work with that charity event. We had Michael Becker was nice enough to come speak. We had we had raffles for lunches, raffles for plane tickets. We had an auctioneer there. It was interesting. It was a lot of work. So
that's awesome. Hey, can you repeat the website address? Cause I mean, you talked about a lot of different free content that you've got on there. And so some people may want to check that out. What is that website?
Yeah, again? It's momentummultifamily.com.
Okay, great. And talk to me a little bit about fear. Like, so you started entrepreneurial endeavors very, very young. So you obviously are somebody that can push past, you know, the fear. But, you know, there's different times when you're trying something new that you have fear and that you have to, even though you're uncomfortable, push forward. Kind of talk about a time when you may have felt that way, and how do you proceed forward even though you're uncomfortable?
I think it happens every week or daily. I don't know. I mean, yeah, if we're being honest here. So, I did a Facebook charity event for cancer care last May for my birthday. I was kind of nervous about that. I've never done anything like that before. And we ended up raising, $5,600, off of a Facebook charity event. I was really nervous about especially if it's for a charity. Like, there's, you know, if it's just, I don't know, I'm speaking or whatever, that's one thing. But if it's for a charity, I feel it's an added pressure because I want to do good things for them. Right.
So, right.
So, you know, there was a lot of, I was very nervous about it. Oh, I'll go into a little quick story on that. So, We went to go talk to Cancer Care Services, and we're like, hey, so this was September, October. And we're like, hey, we'd like to throw a charity event for you. And they're like, you know, were you thinking summer 2020 or fall 2020? No, we're like, you know, in a month or two. And they were like, yeah, like, what are you doing? And I was like, okay, well, we're building an audience. We think we can have some people. And I was like, and we have vendors and sponsors that can kind of help out. So I'm like, I think we got that covered, and we have the venue. And I'm like, okay, well, you know, they're like, it's going to be hard to pull off and a lot of work. We're like, oh, you know, no big deal. We got it. And it was a lot of work.
that's great. So they knew what was in store. You guys didn't know it. So yeah. You just went plowing ahead.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, but yet, no, I'm, you know, I was nervous about putting out that I was going to run. I did a Facebook video about a year ago, actually, where I said, I'm going to run a sub-5 minute mile. And, I'd been training on my own. It's been okay. But I got, you know, I'm like, I want to do this now. And so I'm like, okay, I'm going to go hire a coach. And so found this guy that, he used to run for TCU. And I think the name of his website is Train Like a Kenyan. He's Kenyan. And super, super nice guy. And so I was, you know, nervous about that. I was part of a book that came out this week. Awesome. I was frankly kind of nervous about that too, because I was a lot more. I'm not you know, kind of show my personality and all that, but you know, I was, you know, there's a lot more details about my life that I put out there that, you know, was definitely a past my comfort zone. We'll say that.
Gotcha. What's the name of the book and where can people get it?
Yeah, it's on Amazon. It just came out on Tuesday, and let me look up the exact title. I'll find it for you and
come back to it. Yeah. So also, I don't know if you did, but I mean, it sounds like each stage you kind of go through it and you're able to push past it anyway, but setting up the meetup group, like, you know, are people going to show up?
Yeah.
And, you know, I would think that's a, you know, would have been a fear. And I'll share some of mine. I mean, look, when I said that I didn't get on social media until 3 years ago when I got involved. And then I was going to all these entrepreneurial conferences and people kept talking about Instagram and you need to get on Instagram. You know, if you don't get on Instagram, you're just dumb. And that's what I just kept hearing over and over again. And I'm like, it's a kid app, you know, like why? It's for my kids. And I remember I hired a guy to help me and I was afraid to push the button to send my first post. Like, you know, what are people going to think? You know, I have like no followers, like, you know, what's going to, and it was scary. And that sounds so silly. Like it was scary, you know? And you know, talking about your 5 minute mile posting that, you know, you held yourself accountable by doing that. When I started the podcast, I set a goal to have 105 star reviews on Apple Podcasts. And when I sent that post, I literally, my finger was hovering over the send button for a while because I'm like, what if I only get 5? Like, yeah. I'm going to look dumb.
Yeah.
You know? And I'm like, oh, you got to just push past it. And so did it. So it's like that fear can come in our mind in so many different ways and so many different times. But, you know, we have to push past. One of the ways to push past is instead of thinking about like the negative of like, okay, well, what happens if nobody shows up to the meetup or nobody gives you a 5-star review? But what happens if the opposite happens? What happens if a lot of people show up to the meetup and you educate people and you help them? Or, and the same goes for the podcast and different things. That's, I think, what drives us to push past that fear is, you know, in some instances, it's, you know, a financial gain for you as a GP and for your passive investors on a deal that you think is very promising. Other times it's just giving back and educating other people and hoping that you're having an impact.
Yeah, absolutely. I did found the book name. It's Success Habits of Super Achievers.
Success Habits of Super Achievers.
Yep. It's on Amazon right now. Yeah. And to your point, one thing there, I guess kind of two things I'd like to mention. Yeah. I think that, you know, the reason why some people are afraid of what other people are going to think of them and how they're going to look. And a lot of that's ego driven. And so if you kind of push that ego aside and it's like, you know, everybody's just trying to, you know, they're just trying to, you know, get ahead, trying to, you know, be a better person, you know, et cetera. And then there's a quote by Theodore Roosevelt that's, you know, something I really enjoy. So there, I'm paraphrasing this, but there's, you know, there's, the best thing you can do is, you know, is have the right answer. The next best thing you can do is have the wrong answer. And then the third best thing you could do is do nothing. And so, you know, it's just, you know, whether you know, take action and succeed or not, at least you're out there getting, you're getting something done. And, you know, hey, if you don't succeed, then you learn from it. And then you go back and do better next time. So, I mean, it's not, you know, most of the time, it's not the end of the world. If you kind of look at it like, okay, what's the worst thing that can happen? You know, If I don't run this 5-minute mile, what's the worst thing that can happen? Right. Okay, well, I ran, you know, a 5:20, 5:50, like that's pretty good. You know, right. I mean, I'm not in high school, so.
Right. No, you're absolutely right. And you know, what I found was that, and maybe I'm wrong, but I still think that there are going to be people that are going to, you know, judge you. But what I realize is that, okay, all of a sudden somebody from Chicago or Las Vegas or, you know, someplace else in the country contacts me through Instagram and I'm like, and I have an hour conversation with them. And all of a sudden I'm like, you know, I never would have met that person had I not done this. So I'm not doing it for, you know, the people that, you know, are trying to, you know, keep whatever, you know, judge, but I'm doing it to try to impact other people and help other people. Because look, you went before me. And when I joined 3 years ago, you were kind enough to take my call. And then about a year ago, when I asked you to get together for coffee, you were kind enough to, you know, get together for coffee. Today, you're kind enough to come on the podcast and share with others. And so I want to give back also. I mean, and I think that that's just something that, you know, we just get a lot of joy as a human to help other people and coach other people.
Yeah, 100%. There's, I'm going to paraphrase this quote. Apparently, I like quotes.
Yeah, you must be a big reader too.
Yeah, I try. It's probably been more audiobooks lately because that goes well with running. But there's a quote by Audrey Hepburn, and I actually heard this first from Rod Cleef, was at one of his conferences. But it's you have two hands, you know, one to help yourself, you know, pull yourself forward, and the other one to help someone else, or something like that. But yeah, that's big fan of that. Yeah,
absolutely. Oh my gosh, I'm sure. Like you said, you had a bunch of people help you. I had a bunch of people help me, and why not, you know, help the next person? And, hey, talk to me about your exit strategies on these multifamily deals. You know, what are the exit strategies that you consider when you're going into a deal? And how do you see those play out as the deal progresses?
Yeah. Yeah, so I look at, you know, a lot of times, well, we're going into it with the thought that we're going to hold it long term. So we place longer term debt on stuff. You know, normally it's 10 or 12 year. I really try to get some sort of step down if possible. You take a hit on interest rate and all that, but I like to have a step down just in case, you know, no one knew. you know, a year or two ago, everybody thought interest rates were going to start going up, and now they're super low. And so, you know, we'll see. Everybody thinks interest rates are going to be low for the foreseeable future, but you know, again, we'll see. But I like the option of, you know, having that step down as opposed to defeasance or yield maintenance, which, you know, yields a much higher cost on the back end if you exit those earlier. But in general, so
maybe just talk quickly about, you know, there's some people that totally get what you're saying, you know, and some people that have no idea what the difference is between yield maintenance and step down.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe just talk high level in terms of that optionality.
Yeah. So with step down, you're, you know, typically it depends on, there's lots of different step downs, but the, you know, there's a 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And so that's a percentage of, that's the, basically the prepayment penalty that you pay. It's a percentage of your loan amount. And that's typically a much cheaper option to go if you potentially exit that loan earlier. So we exited a loan early, not to sell recently, but to refi because, you know, interest rates had dropped, our NOI had gone up a lot, and we're like, hey, you know, let's go ahead and reset this guy. And so we ended up refiing and pulling, you know, quite a bit of cash out for investors. On yield maintenance and defeasance, just, I guess, high level, those are just more expensive options. You know, if your loan's, you know, a few million bucks, you're probably, I mean, this is all over the board, but, you know, we had, I've seen some, there was a deal that I assumed the loan on. It was a CMBS loan. The CMBS loan, I'm giving an example now. The CMBS loan was about 3 million bucks and the interest rate, I think, was like 5.5 or maybe as low fives, but the defeasance was $750,000.
Yeah. So, that's a big number to have to absorb.
Yep. So what we ended up doing was we ended up, assuming that loan instead of them eating it on the front end, we held the deal for about two and a half years and we weren't planning to exit early. It's just, you know, we bought it at 9 cap and sold it at 6.5. So, yeah, you make some money when
did pretty well.
Yeah. So
a few things on that. Like, so I come from the loan trading world and so, you know, some people may be thinking, well, why do they have these large prepayment penalties on these deals anyway? So, you know, Fannie and Freddie are really the, you know, kind of the ones that will play in that long-term fixed rate space, 10 to 12 year fixed rate loans where most banks want to do 5 years or less. And predominantly these loans are going to go into securities. Okay. And then the pension funds or insurance companies are going to buy those securities and they want to have that interest coupon, you know, for 10 years. They want to be able to count on that. And so the reason why they have these prepayment penalties is to make up for the fact that they could prepay earlier. So it's, you know, yes, they make money off of it, but a big reason why is because they go into securities that are sold elsewhere. So one of the things I want to talk to you about, though, on this exit strategy topic is that, you know, I've met a lot of syndicators, and I would say that the high majority of the syndicators, the exit strategy is a sale within, you know, it's a 5-year business plan, but it's a sale within, you know, if it's a great market, 2.5, 3 years. If it's, you know, there's some hiccups along the way, maybe it extends to 4, 5, 6, 7 years, but you know, that's their exit strategy. But I've seen you on some of the deals that have, you know, refied, pulled out, you know, investor money, provided that back. And then, you know, if you can return all of it, then you could have infinite returns from that perspective because you have no more money in the deal and you're still getting cash flow. But You're one of the few that I've seen that kind of looks at the refi, pull out cash, give it to the investors, and hold the property as a strategic option. So talk to us about that.
Yeah, I think it all depends on how you feel about the area and the asset in general. The deal that I mentioned where I was a KP on that we've held the deal for 8 years, it's a B deal. It's in Wiley. And so if anybody knows anything about Wiley, they had a massive hailstorm 2 years ago or so. I don't remember, but somewhat recently. So the entire exterior of that deal is brand new. And, you know, it's been a great, you know, on that deal is a great cash flowing asset. It's just, you know, printed out money. And so, and, you know, it's a B deal, it's right across the street from an elementary school. And, you know, Wiley has some supply, you know, they don't really, they may now, but at the time they didn't really have, you know, there's really only one other competitor in the B space in Wiley there. And they may have some new product coming online, but there's not a ton of supply, and Wiley's, you know, and it's next to Plano, helps when your neighbors with Plano,
right?
And so when you have those, good things happen, and so, you know, that was an easy, you know, as far as trying to figure out whether to buy, you know, whether to sell that or not. And then, you know, there's a deal over in HEB that we recently refied, and, you know, kind of similarly, you know, it's next to elementary school. You know, it's a nice cash flowing asset. It's very stable. It's very dependable. We feel it is an older asset, but we feel, you know, we know the bones, and we feel good about, you know, we feel good about everything there. So I really think it just depends on, you know, if maybe you're in an area where you don't feel as good about the long term of, you know, of outlook of that area, then maybe that's something where you go ahead and try and exit. But if you like the area and you like the asset and you feel good about, you know, your roof and your exterior and kind of all your expensive items, then, you know, I don't know. If you can just print money, why not? So,
right.
Yeah.
So now how does that impact the investors in the deal? You know, everybody has different uses for money. And yeah. So, you know, is everybody on board with that strategy?
Yeah, it's interesting. I've pulled investors in the, you know, in the not so recent past, or in the recent past, and you know, there's interesting. So some investors, you know, kind of want to be in and out within, you know, 3 years or so, 3 to 5, kind of as you mentioned. There's some guys that have been in a bunch of deals, and you know, they're fine with just being in that deal forever, because for them, it's a pain in the butt to, you know, to recycle capital and then, you know,
have go to reinvest it someplace else.
Where are they going to put it in? They don't know anything about, they don't have any history on that deal. You know, how's it going to perform?
Right.
Yeah, the performance says this, but, you know, at least with this other deal that, you know, it's been cash flowing and all that, you can feel good about it. And I would say too, just in general, once everybody has a good chunk of their cash out and they're able to go deploy it somewhere else, pretty much everybody is okay, you know, as long as the asset's cash flowing. Everybody likes receiving checks.
So. Right. Good point. Hey, what's your take on, so, you know, value add, BC value add has been such a hot area over the last 3 years, you know, but now that we're in COVID, we're in a little bit of a time where it's more unpredictable, in terms of what's going to happen going forward. And there may be more volatility. What's your take on new construction versus the value add BC space?
I'm a big believer in, you know, watching what people do. And so I'm offering on deal A deals now. So, yeah, so I think that kind of speaks for itself, but, no, I'm still looking at BC stuff. There hasn't been much of a give on pricing at all, especially within DFW. Everybody's collections are awesome. And at least for the most part, unless if they were struggling before COVID, then, you know, they're probably struggling now too. But, no, I like, you know, if all the cap rates are on top of each other, then, you know, some of the A's start to make sense. So when you see B's anywhere between 100 and 160 a door, and, you know, and you can buy an A for, you know, 150, 160 a door, you know, and it's, you know, 20, 30 years newer, it, you know, starts to make a lot of sense for sure. I know we've offered on a few different A deals, you know, probably within Texas in the 120 door range. So,
yeah, I've been, the BC value add space, you know, makes a lot of sense in terms of being able to find other, you know, properties that already have made the upgrades, and you find, you know, a property that, you know, the market rents are below, and you can kind of, you already see the path. But now that we're in this time, and I really wasn't, I didn't have my mind on new construction for that reason. And I think there's risk in terms of the initial lease up phase and also absorption in term, you know, there's how many other deals are being built around your area. But one of the things that I think that's interesting to think about in this time is that, you know, on a new build, you know, it may take a year or longer to build it, you know, and well, there's going to be a lot of, I think at least, you know, who knows, but I think there's going to be a lot of unpredictability and volatility, you know, with the election happening, what's going to, you know, eventually the government's not going to be able to continue to send out trillions of dollars. So, you know, you're going to have more, I believe you're going to have more businesses that will go under, and, you know, you'll have some challenges along the way that will come up. And if you're using that time to build, you know, versus having to execute a value add plan, I don't know. I'm not involved in one right now, but it's just a thought that has come up in my mind that it may be not a bad time to look at that.
Yeah. I mean, that's the ultimate value add, right? You go from dirt to a building. So, we're looking at, we've looked at build. I've not built and not involved in a building and developing, but we're looking at that for sure. One thing that's pretty interesting that I would as far as A versus B and C is the cap rate gap over the past 10 years is a lot tighter for A's versus, you know, B's and C's. You know, if you look at the history of C's within DFW, I don't remember that. I'm kind of pulling these, you know, out of the air a little bit, but they're between, you know, a 6 and a 9 or so, or maybe even a little bit, you know, wider. Whereas, you know, within the A space, you're looking at between a 4.5 and a 5.5. So it's just a lot, you know, so from a exit cap perspective, there's some additional assurances within that A space, but like you said, you know, it depends on where you are and where you buy and where you build and all that. You could, you know, you could have someone, you know, building a competitor right next door to you. So the stuff that we've looked at in the A space, we're trying to find spots where there's not a, because there's some, you know, there's some bloodbath concessions, you know, even within DFW. And so, you know, trying to find those spots where there's not a whole lot of concessions and where you don't have a ton of other, you know, competition, I think would be key.
Yeah, that's huge. So before, when we were talking about the your website and everything and putting out content, you know, I noticed that you're doing a lot of online webinars. And so how does that work? And, you know, what benefit is there to, you know, you guys for putting the content together and the, you know, the individual that signs up for the content?
So I would, you know, we have a lot of, just different content, up there in general. So it's a, you know, whether you're new or.
So you have stuff on the website, but you also have like, okay, and maybe I'm wrong, but like next Thursday, we're going to have this event going on and, you know, sign up for the webinar. And that has become, you know, more prevalent, not only in the multifamily industry, but just in general, because conferences have gone away. So a lot more people are trying to vie for people's attention and are doing these online webinars. So just speak to the ones that like you have an actual time horizon on it.
Yeah. So for our webinars, I mean, our goal is to, you know, just bring education in general, add value. And, you know, we've had some really good guests that have helped out a lot with that. We've had, you know, we had Dan Hanford on, pretty recently. We had a military panel. So I think anytime the audience can relate to whoever's up there, and that's what we're trying to do, whether it's a doctor panel or we're just trying to get them to relate to folks. And
so that's very interesting. I like that panel approach. So let's say you're doing a doctor panel approach. How do you market to try to attract doctors?
We don't do anything special. We just, you know, you've probably seen it. We put it on Facebook and we put it on LinkedIn, and then we'll post about it some, but, yeah, we don't do any advertising right now. You know, it's really just, you know, we are building our email list, so that it does, you know, help with that. But you know, we don't, there's no ad spend behind that right now. So.
Gotcha. Yeah. Cause I've read books and I've seen things where people have been able to within Facebook, target, you know, very specific niches. So you know, when you're doing these panels, you could really get specific on who you want to target.
Yep.
So that's interesting. So Dustin, what do you do for fun outside of real estate?
I love to be outside, despite my lack of tan, but, I enjoy hiking a lot.
Have the Irish complexion, but I see you on social media all the time that you're hiking up this mountain, right? Yeah.
Of Colorado.
Wearing the Denver, Colorado shirt right now.
Yeah. So, you know, yeah, I just love to be outside. I've played soccer since I was 4 years old and played my whole life. I'm not playing right now during COVID because I play indoor and anyways, but like to be active, run, normal stuff, go try new restaurants. I like Mediterranean quite a bit and Indian food. So I like to try different things, love to travel. But right when COVID hit, I was supposed to fly out to Europe. A friend of mine was turning 40 and I was coordinating with his wife. He didn't know I was coming. I was going to show up for his 40th birthday. And I was going to Facebook Live it too, just to really
nice.
But, anyways, didn't work out. But, so I told him, I was like, you better be on the lookout. I might just show up at any time. So as soon as the COVID thing kind of chills out, I may buy a ticket and head out there. But yeah, I like to, you know, normal stuff, like to travel and hike and be outside and be active. So
awesome.
Yeah.
What's the next stretch goal for Dustin?
I'm really focused on the sub 5 minute mile. And then the other goal, which is going to be easier, for me, is running a quarter mile in under 60 seconds. So I'm more of a sprinter. So that's easier for me. So those are kind of my two main goals. We're, you know, much like yourself, I'm sure we're going after, going after deals right now. We have, you know, plenty of LOIs out and all that, but, really my, those two running goals are the biggest, goals I have. So, and then once I hit those and, then I'm like, oh, okay, cool. I did this. Now then I'm going to push even further. So
exactly. That's what's great. Whenever I talk to successful people, they're always, you know, they're going after something. And then once they get there, they're pushing on to something else. And, which is amazing. And that's what keeps everybody charged up. Right. So, hey, if there's a passive listener on, you know, what advice would you give them? They've never done a syndicated deal as a passive. You know, how do they go about getting involved?
Yeah. So I would reach out to different syndicators and I would get to know them. You know, you're investing with people. It's not, you know, it's not a marriage, but you're potentially in this business relationship with people for potentially up to 10 years, right? If we're doing a 10-year loan. So, but certainly I would think of it's going to be in that 5 to 7 year range. So find some people that you mesh with and that you believe in them, you like their business plan. I mean, people do business with people that they know, like, and trust. So I'd get to know the people and, you know, don't be afraid to ask, you know, before you invest. I've never had anyone ask me this, you know, can I see your criminal record? Can I see your, you know, credit score? I mean, you know, I think, you know, stuff like that's important. And then I would, kind of once you get to know whoever the people are that you're wanting to invest with, I would really focus on location. There's a lot of things that you can change about a property, but you can't change the location. You know, if you're buying in a C-minus area and you pour a lot of money into it, that makes it look like a B. Well, it's still a C-minus area, and those B residents aren't going to necessarily, you know, head into that area because of schools or because of ego or whatever. So I would, we're really focused on, you know, the deals we're looking at. We're really focused on location, and I invest passively too. So that's something I look for as well. I think that's pretty much it. I do look at, I look at year one cash flow, and I look at the debt service coverage ratio, as well. But, year one, what I do is I look at the prior T3 or trailing three income, and then I kind of swap that in for whoever's performa that is. And then if I'm happy with what that means is the worst case scenario, if I assume that the new buyer can't do any better than the seller on income, am I okay with that cash flow, whatever that looks like? And if that cash flow is, fairly, if that feels good to me, then I move forward. So that's one thing I kind of, a quick test I look for.
Yeah. That's a good point. I think that's great advice. You know, I would say that, maybe pick the market, that you want to invest in first, and then look for syndicators in that market. You know, where do you find syndicators? Well, you find syndicators through social media. There's a ton of Facebook groups that are focused on multifamily. If you know somebody that has invested in a syndication, you could ask them for referrals. You can go to free meetup groups when they start having actual live meetup groups. You can get involved with online webinars and online meetups like what Dustin has available. And, the one thing that's very unique about making an investment in these private placement deals, which, yes, they are long-term, and that's very important that you have to focus on, do I want to do business with this person for a long-term period? But you have the ability before you invest to call that person or possibly even meet with that person for coffee, where you don't have that ability when you're buying stocks. You know, you're not going to call the CEO of IBM and he's going to call you back. So, you know, it really is a more relationship driven business proposition. So, you know, make sure you get out there and don't be shy about asking questions like Dustin brought up. Dustin, if people want to get a hold of you, what's the best way for them to reach you?
Yeah, my email is probably the best way. It's dustin@momentummultifamily.com. And as Darren said, I'm all over Facebook and I'm trying to follow Darren's lead on Instagram.
That's funny. That's funny. Dustin, I really appreciate you coming on, man. You're a leader in the space, and I've noticed that, you know, you did a lot within the multifamily mentorship group, but then you didn't let it stop you from there. You've gone out and you've built relationships with syndicators and passive investors and all over the place, and you continue to try to learn. And that's just a, you know, something for all of us to learn from too. And we're all trying to grow. So appreciate you coming on. Listeners, I hope you enjoyed that one. Until next week, signing off.
Yeah, thank you. See you guys.
Thank you for listening to Darren Batchelder's Real Estate Investing Show at darrenbatchelder.com. If you liked the episode, please provide us with a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or your podcast platform of choice. If you already provided us with a 5-star review, then thank you, and please share the show with a friend.